Blog Talk Radio.
Friend, the Sand Tiger, DJ Southeast Vince, coming at you from a place called Durham, North Carolina, and this is Black by Color only on CNM Radio. On this show, I will discuss current events and issues that affect the black race and take on the apostles of blackness. Hopefully, you'll get something out of this show, and if you have a question or a comment, make sure you season it well with respect. Well, I'll push the kick button, and you'll suffer the curse of the fruit bat. So don't come here being a fruit bat, as this is a fruit bat-free program. You are listening to Black by Color only. Out there in Blog Talk Radio land, welcome to today's show, Black by Color Only, where I take on the black nation, speaking truth to the black nation. If you would like to be a guest to call into this program, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284. And you can call in and talk about anything related to the subject matter, but I will give you a word of warning. There'll be no ad hominem attacks or character assassinations or random insults, things of that sort, gaslighting, excessive profanity. If you feel like you want to engage in these type of activities, you'd best not even call in to interact with the show or even show up in my chat room. I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me on whatever subject I'm talking about. You know, just come here with an air of respect, okay? I don't need people coming on here being disrespectful and, just trying to disrupt the show. You know, we got enough stupid people in the world. We don't need any more on my program, okay? So having said all that, hope you have a good day on this show. If you come in and interact and whatever, I already see somebody's in my queue right now. But I wanted to talk about what's going on in the country today. This is kind of interesting what we have going on. Now for the past several years, whenever you mention the name of Memphis, Tennessee, the first thing that comes up in a lot of people's minds is high crime rate. Excuse me. Memphis, Tennessee, for the past several years has been probably in the top five the worst cities in the United States as far as crime. And it's a sad shame because, you know, you don't want to see that in Tennessee. My mom's from Tennessee, you know. But we have always, lately, we've made Memphis, Tennessee synonymous with areas of crime. And, you know, of course, a lot of people, they'll sit there and talk about, well, what should we do about the crime problem in Memphis? You know, they do this with all the other major cities around the United States. And a lot of people really don't do anything about it. You know, there are certain little factors that come in why people don't, you know, deal with crime like they should. You know, some people say, well, maybe we're being too harsh, or maybe we're just pointing out a certain group of people, or, you know, stuff like that. And they really, you know, they kind of dance around the solution to dealing with crime. Now, don't get me wrong. If you get real tough on crime, there's always going to be some nutcase that's going to try to push themselves against the law. Okay, you can enact the death penalty and whatever. You can enact tougher sentences and whatever. There's always going to be a few in the bunch that are going to be like, you know what, bump this law. But my thing is this: when you get tough on crime, when you really push that you're not going to stand for certain crimes or whatever, a lot more people will think twice before they commit a crime. You know, if you like those of you all listen to this program, you know I support the death penalty. A person commits a crime that's worthy of death, like you kill someone in cold blood, kill a government official or a government employee or something like that, just kill anybody in cold blood, I think you should get the death penalty. Now, the death penalty is, in my opinion, I think it's on life support somewhat in this country, but we need to revive it, you know, give it some vitamins and, you know, some electrolytes and bring it back to health. Because the problem with the death penalty in this country is, when a person is given the death penalty, it usually takes decades before that person meets their end. And by that time, you know, a lot of times they gain a lot of sympathy from people who say, oh, don't kill him. He did this like 20 years ago. I'm sure he's reformed and yada, yada. No, that's not the point. The point is you need to be punished for your crime. And I'm the type of person who's like this. If we know that you committed a crime that is worthy of death, I wouldn't give you a week. Maybe as much as a month to get your priorities in order, get your, well, you're in prison. You ain't got too many priorities to get in order, but excuse me. But to get your life in order, you know, make your peace with God. Think about what you want as your final meal, you know, write it down and whatever, you know, write to your next of kin or whatever. Typically, I wouldn't give you a week. Let's say you're convicted of this crime on Monday. And, you know, the sentence has been handed down and you're worthy of death or whatever. I would hand that sentence down. Okay, let's say your sentence has been handed down that Monday. When Saturday morning comes, people will be talking about who you were. Who you were, you know, because you'll be a thing of the past by Saturday morning. And I think that's how they should enact it. But anyway, I'm getting off the track a little bit. We had an incident not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, where some police officers, and let me tell you all, we need to give Pianki, who was in my queue, we need to give him credit for this, because he was the first person that brought this story up to me. he was the first one that I just happened to look on my Facebook page, and he posted an article about these five cops that killed this guy, killed a black man in Memphis, Tennessee. And I had to give all props to Bianchi. I don't know why the story took as long as it did to come out, but Bianchi, I think he gave me the article to this story about 2 weeks ago. And I was like, here's the thing about it. The five police officers involved in this crime in Memphis, well, they're accused of beating this black man in Memphis, Tennessee. And, you know, usually we'll hear about white cops doing this. We'll hear about the white police officers doing this and everything. But these guys are black. And I think that's the reason why it took a while for the story to really unfold like it has now. You know, it was kind of slow and unfolding. And now I saw the video. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. When the first videos that I saw of this, I was like, I don't see anything here, you know. And that's a drawback I have with that's a problem I have with body cams, because when you have body cams, usually you're right there in the action and you really can't see, you know, what's really going on. You know, like if there's a fight or a scuffle or whatever, you know, you really can't tell what's going on. That is until I saw another video that was from a distance. It wasn't a police body cam. And they showed, you know, they showed the action as it happened. And when I saw the first videos, I was like, I can't see what's going on. But when I saw this video camera recording the action from a distance, and I saw what was going on, I was like, okay, that is kind of brutal. And I was like, oh, now I can see what people may have been saying. The police officers, they got this guy out of the, I forget his name, is it Tyre Simmons? I think it is. I think it's Tyre Simmons or Tyree Simmons. I don't know how they pronounce the name, but it's spelled T-Y-R-E, Tyre. So I'll just call him Tyre unless, you know, someone corrects me or whatever. But the police were already in gangster mode, you know, got the guy out of the car. The guy was resisting. Don't get me wrong. He was resisting. But the police in this case, I can't give them a pass on this one. I just can't. I can't give them a pass, you know, because When I saw the first videos, all I heard was the police, you know, their words, their speech and everything. And they sounded like a group of gangsters, really. They sounded like a group of gangsters going after a rival gang member or something like that. You know, they were very unprofessional. I'll tell you that. They were very unprofessional. And what they did to this young man, when I saw the full video, the video from a distance, these guys were kicking this man in the head, punching him in the face. And I was like, you all, it's five of you. It is five of you out there. Why in the world are you all doing this? Dude ain't going anywhere. He ain't going anywhere. It's five of you. You got him. He's struggling and whatever, but he's not going anywhere. So why do you have to punch him, beat him with a nightstick, kick him in the head? One officer just came out of nowhere and started kicking him in the head. And I'm like, you know, see, this is why people disrespect the police force, because this happens more often than it should. I'm not saying it happens all the time, but it happens more often than it should. Now, do I still respect our police officers and everything? Yes, I do, because most of them are going to do the same. They're going to do the right thing. But this is the reason why a lot of times people lose respect for police officers. Now, there are certain people, though. I think Cori Bush is one of them. Cori Bush is that nutcase in, is it Georgia? I forget where Cori Bush is from. That nutcase lady, I'll probably get her mixed up with Stacey Abrams because they look kind of similar. But she's a congresswoman, and she gets up there talking about, you know, this is about white supremacy. White supremacy. And I'm sitting there like, lady, you do realize that all the officers that have been charged in this case, they're all black. Kind of reminds me of the Freddie Gray case back some years ago up in Baltimore. Freddie Gray ended up getting killed in police custody, and people want to shout Black Lives Matter and, you know, we're tired of this and all that and everything. And it turns out that six of the cops that were involved in that case were black. Most of Baltimore City Council is black. Most of the people that run Baltimore are black, but oh no, this is white supremacy. And the same thing they're saying here, you know, certain powers out there. I think Al Sharpton gave his two cents worth of rhetoric, and they're sitting up there talking about, oh, this is white supremacy and all that, and everybody who's involved is black. Now, there are certain little angles that people are going to view this case from. There are some that are going to view this as, okay, you know, these guys were just plain out wrong. I'm one of those. They were just wrong. Now, you might have a different opinion. That's okay. I believe they were wrong. But some might say, well, if they were white cops beating a black man, all of them would have kept their jobs without realizing people like Derek Chauvin. I'm not sure about Darren Wilson, you know, but Derek Chauvin, he was convicted and he was tried and convicted, and he now sits in a prison cell. Forget the fact that these men, they were, they're not white, but they've been fired and they've been convicted of this young man's death. But, you know, people are going to make this out to be, you know, well, if they were white cops, they still have their jobs and they don't have any, they don't have a, as a friend of mine says, they don't have a toenail to stand on with that rhetoric. And then you might have some that come from the angle of some type of historical myth that the police force came about because there were patrols of people that used to search for black people that, you know, were slaves and that escaped from their masters. And that's where today's police force comes from. They've evolved from that. So either way you slice it, except for, you know, the first one I mentioned, that these guys are just plain out wrong, it's going to be something about white men, the white man this and a white man that. You got people in this country, and I call them the apostles of blackness. Every negative thing that happens to black people as a whole, it can be traced back to white racism or white supremacy. And there may be some out there that are blaming this because, you know, the police force, you know, they were started by white racists who were chasing after, you know, escaped slaves, and this is the police force that we have today. Now, given, I would like to ask the city of Memphis how they screen people who sign up to be police officers. Because, like I said, when I was listening to these guys, you know, doing their thing with this young man, they sounded very unprofessional to me. They sounded very unprofessional. And I know some of you all might have a thing about me not liking cussing and everything. And you might say that's a personal thing or whatever, stuff like that. But these guys, I have never heard the amount of profanity in a police video like I have in this one, ever. Now, you might have heard some that were just as bad, you know, It might be out there, but I've never heard the level of profanity in a police video like this one. Never. And like I said, these guys sounded like gangbangers. Yeah, bro, you see what he did, bro? Yeah, I'm going to mess up an MF and all this and everything and stuff like that. I'm like, wait a minute now. You know. But I have to be on the side of those who say these police officers were wrong for what they did. Now, some of you all out there might be saying, oh, Vincent, you just saying that because they're black. Warren, excuse me. You might be out there saying that the only reason why you say that because you don't want to say you don't want to see black people in a positive light, which is a lie. But I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there. But we all look at, and see, this is what I've been saying for several years now. The issue of police brutality is not a black and white issue. It's a general issue because every race can say that, hey, you know, we've got our story. We have our stories of police brutality, and it has nothing to do with whether you're black or white or Hispanic or Asian. And I do have to say that, you know, even though I still highly respect our police forces, there needs to be some reform in our police force to prevent incidents like this from happening again. Now, could that young man still be alive today if he hadn't resisted arrest? Probably. But that doesn't excuse the police for what they did to him. And what I saw, oh my goodness. They had one, one part of the video that I saw. They had him standing up and it looked like the police officers were just taking turns punching him in the face. I mean, like what you see in the movies. I was like, my goodness, it was uncalled for. It really was uncalled for because that man wasn't going anywhere. And you know, they made the statement that man must have been on something because I was spraying him and everything and stuff. Yeah, he may have been on something, but that does not excuse these officers for what they did, not in my book. Now, this wasn't as brutal as the Rodney King incident back in 1991, and people are comparing this to the Rodney King incident, which I think they can do that, but I don't think it was as brutal as that. And once again, people can disagree with me. But I think those four officers that attacked Rodney King, every last one of them should have spent at least 20 years in jail. They say, you know, Rodney King tried to attack one of the police officers. You can see him trying to attack one of the police officers. And maybe he was. But they didn't have to beat him like they did. Now, Rodney King, he was a bonehead. Let me just say that. Rodney King was a straight-up bonehead. Because his actions afterwards did not gain him any favors with people. You know, excuse me. People were sympathetic towards him after he got beaten by those officers. And I'm going to tell you, it was a travesty of justice when those officers got off from beating Rodney King back in 1991. But do I think it's a black or white thing, a black and white thing or a racial thing? Nah, I don't. But like I said, the apostles of blackness will use anything to jump on this opportunity to throw out the race card. Yeah, it may have been a white officer attacking a black person, but that does not mean that the white officer is a racist. We all saw that video of was his name Willie Scott, when he was running from the police officer and a police officer shot him in the back And a lot of us want to say racism, racism, racism. And what I saw on that video was very horrible. It should never have happened. But I hold reservations to say if it was racist or not. What I saw was a police officer stepping his bounds of authority to execute judgment on someone else who was not a threat to him. That's what I saw. Now, if it was racism or whatever, you know, I'm holding off judgment on that. Because I don't know what was in the mind of that police officer. They gave him 23 years in prison, which I think he should have gotten a death penalty, really. I'm just going to be honest. Because what I saw, that man was, of course, the man probably attacked him and whatever, but the man was running away from him. And if a person is running away from you and they are unarmed, they are not a threat to you. But we always want to make this, we always want to make these situations out to be racist. And you got people out there, you know, we need justice for black people and all this and everything. But the officers that attacked this young man a couple of weeks ago, they were black themselves. Oh, this is his civil rights. And even when you went to, you know, certain news sites, they would tell you five police officers beat black man to death. And you see how they like to dress up their headlines or whatever. They won't say five police officers. If this young man had been white, they won't say five police officers killed a white man. They'll just say five police officers kill a man. But they had to put black man in there because that riles up the apostles of blackness. And then they get out there, act like a bunch of monkeys. And I heard they had some riots last night. And I don't think it's going to go nationwide. I could be wrong. I won't be surprised if it does. Because a lot of these people, they just like to take an opportunity to act like a bunch of animals. And like I said, when I saw the first videos come out of this incident, I was like, I don't see anything. What? I don't see anything. But then I saw the one that was just, you know, kind of standing afar off. It looked like someone was in a balcony or something. And it said they had a camera on a rod. And you saw the whole scene. And I said, okay, I see now. You know, I mean, they were kicking a man in the head. What? He's on the ground and you're kicking him in the head. Now, I know he's resisting and everything, but it does not give you the right to kick him in the head and then punch him in the face like they did. No, it doesn't. Wrestle him to the ground. But you didn't have to punch him and kick him like you did. Now, I know he was resisting, and that did not give them an excuse to do what they did to him. They were hitting him in the back with their nightsticks and everything. That was uncalled for. But to make this out as a case of racial hatred from the police force, it tells you what the mindset of a lot of people is in this country. They don't care if you're black or if you're white. If you are a police officer and you commit an action against somebody in a minority group, that means the police force is racist. And I remember a video I saw maybe about 10 years ago. You know, some guys were trying to explain why they think the police force is racist. And someone asked them the question about, well, what about the black police officers? And they said the black police officers are intimidated of the white police officers. And that's why they act the way they do. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Scotty, beam me up. And I was like, oh my goodness. But the first time I heard this story was Pianchi. He shared this on my Facebook page. And I was sitting there. I was like, oh, yeah, finally. Someone's going against someone is finally speaking out about black-on-black crime. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. But I don't know where they're going to go from here. I don't know how it's going to go. But like I said, you got members of the Apostles of Blackness. They're going to give their take on, they're going to give their own personal take on this incident. And no matter if the players are black or white, they're still going to blame white supremacy. And they're still doing it to this day. And like I said, that just lets you know where the mindset of a lot of these people really are. And like I said, I don't care if you're black. I don't care if you're white. I don't care what you are. You do something wrong, I'm calling you out on it. Of course, you got some people who think I'm one-sided because I got this program and I just rail against black people and stuff like that. That's not what I don't have this show just so I can rail against black people. The reason why I speak a lot more on black people than I do white people, because I'm like, black folks don't make the same mistakes that certain white folks made in the past. Just because there were certain white people that hated you in the past, it doesn't mean that it's our turn to hate them back. Because I know a lot of you all out there, y'all think the only reason why I do this is because I'm trying to kiss up to white people. But like I said, I'm a black person. I care about people with my skin color, and I don't want to see them go the same route that other people have gone through. But I'm not a race man. I never will be a race man. Never will be. As by me being a Christian, that tells me that I'm supposed to treat everybody equally. Despite what certain members of their race does or whatever, I am supposed to treat people equally. And I'm going to treat everybody with respect. I don't care what your skin color is. I'm not going to treat you with more respect because you share my skin color. I'm going to treat you with respect regardless. My wife and I, we've been going to this church for the past, going on 7 years now. And they have what they call a life group, and we have a Zoom meeting, and we've been studying the book of John in the Bible. And guess what? Me and my wife are the only black people in this group. And these people have invited us to their house tomorrow after church for brunch to get to know us a little bit better. And I appreciate that. And these people are white. They're all white. One lady, her name is Cookie. Little older lady. She looks like she's in her mid-70s, maybe. Sweet little old lady. And she says she just loves to hear the stories that my wife likes to tell, because my wife's from Liberia, and she shares her stories about life in Liberia and when she grew up in China and all that and everything and stuff like that. And she says she loves to hear my wife tell her stories. I don't care. I don't give a rip pair of jeans about what race you are. I'm going to give you equal respect. I'm not all out just to support the black people. Oh, you got to support black businesses. Well, if a black business can give me a quality product at a good price, they will be supported. But if they don't, I'm going somewhere else. Oh, you just don't want to support black businesses. Now, if the black businesses stop, trying to con people and whatever, raising their prices for everything, thinking they're all special and they can raise their prices while everybody else can still give you a good quality product at a good price, no, I'm not going to cater to the black businesses. I'm sorry. Because to me, it's not about race. It's not about race. It's about equality. I don't care about that garbage. And I know some people don't understand that. They don't want to understand it. I'm like, okay, well, then you do you, and I'll do me. But here's the thing, though. If you don't think like I do, I'm not going to disrespect you. I'm not going to sit there and disrespect you. Because everybody is worthy of my respect. Everybody is. Now, you can lose my respect. I will say that. And I'm a type of person who don't like to be disrespected. I really don't. That might be a flaw of mine or whatever, or maybe I should look the other way and just say, okay, they're going to... I really don't like being disrespected. I really don't. But I'm always going to treat everybody with respect. When I go to the grocery store or whatever, you know, and the cashier, you know, rings up my order and packs my bag, throws them in, I tell them, have a good day. Now, I don't see a lot of people telling their cashier to do that. Have a good day. Have a good day. Because I'm like this. Yes, they're supposed to be professional, and they're supposed to treat their customers with respect, but my belief system is that respect is a door that swings both ways. Yeah, you're supposed to treat me with respect. You're supposed to be professional, but that does not mean that I can treat you any old kind of way. And I see that a lot with people. They think they go to a restaurant, they go to the store. You're supposed to treat me with respect. Well, then why don't you treat them with respect? They may have been a few seconds slower with your order, and you go off on them. And see, I talk like this because I used to be a waiter. Back in 1987 in a Pizza Hut on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. It was the most popular Pizza Hut in the entire city. Pennsylvania Avenue, Southeast D.C. And people come in, they got all types of different attitudes and whatever. And they don't know what you're going through. You know, in that kitchen in the back there. They don't know what you're going through. And a lot of people feel entitled when you come into, you know, when you come into a place that has some kind of customer service, you know, they think you're supposed to cater to them, but they don't have to show the same type of respect to you. Now, I really admire those people who, no matter the disrespect that is thrown at them, they're still going to show respect. I really admire those type of people. But my attitude when I go into an establishment that has a customer base or whatever, when I go in there, I go in there with the attitude of I'm going to respect everybody around me. I don't care if you're supposed to cater to me or whatever. You are still worthy of my respect. You might mess up my order. Yeah, I mean, we're human. People are going to mess up sometimes. People don't seem to understand that, though. People are going to mess up sometimes. It doesn't mean that they meant to do it or anything like that. I remember we went to this restaurant. I think it was a Pizza Hut here in Durham, and it was a group of us and everything. And it may have taken a little longer for the pizza to arrive and everything. And people were upset, you know. And these are supposed to be Christian people. And you know what they said? They said, shoot, they need to respect us because we're children of the king. Well, the people in the kitchen don't know that. Yeah, we might be children of the king. They might not be children of the king, but does that mean that they're supposed to respect us above everybody else? No. That means they are supposed to respect everybody equally. And I don't care if you Christian or whatever, you know, some of you all out there, y'all walk around with your chest all out and everything like, yeah, I'm a child of the king. People got to respect me. No, they don't. The Bible even says those who live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. But my point is, I don't care what your position is in life. That doesn't give you a level of respect above or a level of respect below anyone else. And like I said, yes, you can lose respect. You can, I tell people, you can lose my respect. It might take you some work to get it back, but you can lose it. If you show yourself to be disrespectful, it doesn't mean I'm going to treat you ugly because you treated me ugly, but you're still going to lose my respect. And even if you gain that respect back, that doesn't mean you're going to gain my trust either. But there's a level of respect that I'm going to give to everybody. Whenever I see a police officer or whatever, if I get a chance, I go up to them, shake their hand, say, thank you for your service. Yeah, you got a lot of dingbats in our police force. I just finished talking about that. But that does not mean that we should disrespect all police officers. Y'all, Retta, you need to cut it out. Retta called me Cousin Coon. All right, Cousin Sambo. I'm always going to have that level of respect for everybody. I don't care if you're my police officer, fireman, cashier, restaurant worker. Hey, you might be a person that just straight up don't like me. Boy, I don't like you. I don't like the way you look. Okay, well, you still get my respect. Even though you're being disrespectful somewhat, but you'll still get my respect. I've even prayed for the people who have done me the worst in my life. I prayed for them. Say, I hope they live to see their 90s. Hope the best for them. I don't hope anything bad on them. Now, that's true Christianity, because a lot of people, they don't understand what true Christianity is. You know, you got certain people that think Christians were the ones that went over to Africa and stole Africans and brought them to America and forced Christianity on them. They don't understand what Christianity is. We use Christianity so loosely today. People really don't know what a real Christian is. And when they see an actual Christian, they still want to paint everybody with that same brush. Oh, you Christian people, you forced the black people into Christianity. And I tell people, ain't no one forced me to be a Christian. Christianity was 100% my choice. Nobody forced me to be a Christian. I realized one day that I was a sinner headed for hell, and I didn't want to go to hell. And I said, this Christianity thing sounds pretty good. Now, there may be those of you all out there who are not Christians, and you might think I'm condemning you by saying that. I'm not trying to condemn you. The Bible says you're condemned already. I can't condemn you. And certain people, I've gotten to the point where I'm not just going to tell you about my Christianity. I'm going to show it to you. And see, that's the problem with a lot of people. A lot of people like to give lip service, but when it comes to their actions, it tells a different story. See, I'm not just going to give you a lot of lip action. Oh, I'm a Christian. I'm a good person. I can say whatever I want to about myself, but it's you observing my life. You're like, wait a minute. This guy says he's a Christian, but he's really acting it out. He's really showing what a Christian really is. Because you got a lot of people out there, they're just a bunch of religious thespians. They act the part, but they really don't live the part. They give a lot of lip service. What did Jesus say? This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. So I stop short with calling everybody a Christian who says they are a Christian. You know, you go on TV and you see these people say, yes, I'm a Christian. Okay, well, okay, you say you're a Christian. I'm going to see. The Bible says to try the spirits by the spirit to see if they are of God. I think that's in 1 John. 1 John, the 4th or the 5th chapter. Try the spirits by the spirit. See, I don't take my Christianity loosely. I don't just throw it out there, oh, I'm a Christian. I live this thing. Now, am I saying I'm perfect? No, I'm not perfect at all. I got my flaws. Lord knows I got my flaws. I got plenty of flaws. And something that I've noticed is that a lot of actions that are contributed, that are, you know, associated with Christians are not Christian acts. I remember last year, this was one of the most disgusting things I think I ever seen in my life. There was a pastor in, I think it was Texas, hawked a loogie into his hand, mixed it up a little bit, and smeared it on his brother's face, trying to give an example of what he was preaching. And a guy I like to watch on YouTube named Anthony Brian Logan. I love his videos and whatever, but Anthony Brian Logan said, you know, if that's Christianity, I'm fine. Meaning, you know, I ain't, you know, you Christians, look at what y'all do. And I wrote on his video, that's not Christianity. That man smearing his loogie all over his brother's face, that's not Christianity. But a lot of people associate stuff like that with Christianity. That is not Christian. Well, what about when Jesus spit in the mud and he smeared that mud on the blind man's face? Blind man got healed, didn't he? What purpose did this man have with hawking a loogie into his hand and smearing it on his brother's face? His brother wasn't looking for healing. See, Jesus, there was a method to Jesus's madness. And I'm not trying to downplay what Jesus did when I say that. Yeah, Retta. Yeah, I do that too. I do that too. Anthony Brian Logan, he seems to have the character that a lot of Christians could learn from. He does. When he goes on his videos, he doesn't cuss. And he just tells you straight off the bat. And yeah, he's a very nice guy, very nice. And yeah, stuff like that would keep any reasonable person away from Christianity, because we got this view of Christians that, you know, this is what we do. But I pray that a real Christian will come into Anthony Brian Logan's life, and that he will have as open a mind as he seems to have on his YouTube videos, and listen to that person. Because a lot, like I said before, a lot of what we call Christian today really is not Christian. It's not. And folks, be honest with you, I do not know how in the world I got off over into this. Somebody probably needs to hear it. But I started to show off about the 5 officers who were condemned for beating this man to death. And I say, yes, they are guilty of at least second-degree murder. What they did to this young man was uncalled for. And when I saw it, when I actually saw the actual video of what actually happened, I was like, you got to be kidding me. No way. This is not happening. And when you see things like this, you know, it's the same thing I was saying about the George Floyd incident. When these officers do this stuff, the first thing that comes to my mind is, what the heck are you thinking? What are you thinking? Now, I don't believe George Floyd was killed by Derek Chauvin. I really don't. But Derek Chauvin having his knee and George Floyd's back for that long, that was not a good look. George Floyd wasn't going anywhere. George Floyd died of an overdose of fentanyl. That's what killed him. But it wasn't a good look for Derek Chauvin keeping his knee in his back that long. George Floyd wasn't going anywhere. And I say the same thing about this young man. I mean, when I saw the picture of, what's his name, Tyre Simmons, I believe that, you know, when I saw the picture of him in the hospital, I said, man, they really beat the crap out of him. And it was all uncalled for. Dude was already handcuffed. He was already handcuffed. And he ain't going anywhere. Here's the thing, though. Dude was skinny as I don't know what, you know. And they were chasing him. They were huffing. But they caught him. They got him. They got his hands. He did resist. Don't get me wrong. I do not condone him resisting. But I also don't condone those police officers for doing what they did. Yeah, Retta, yeah, I agree with that. You know, Retta says, this is a video age. Folks think whatever they do in an alleyway will stay there until it ends on social media. These cops are disgusting, and I'm sure they thought they were going to get away with this heinous act. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they thought that too. So those of you all who like to criticize me because I call my show Black by Color Only, are you going to criticize these black cops? Are you? I mean, for real. Or are you just going to look away? Because some people probably look away and be like, oh, wait a minute, these are black cops, they're black. But some of you all out there, you know, you're still trying to throw out that race card. Because some of you all, y'all been taught wrong that the police force is owned by white supremacists. And everybody who's in the police force, they need to listen to these white supremacists, to their white masters over their heads. But it was real disgusting to me. It really was. When I saw the full video, I was like, they didn't have to do him like that. Yeah, you could have kept them down on the ground and, you know, got, I mean, it was five of you. And these officers ain't skinny. I've seen their pictures. They're not skinny. They're not skinny at all. I mean, they look like they were well fed, you know. Eventually, he could have resisted as much as he wanted to, but eventually they would have overpowered him and he still would have been taking a trip in the paddy wagon. But it was uncalled for what they did. It really was. But this is not an opportunity to throw out the race card. This is an opportunity to say, you know what, you all, we really need to reconsider how our police force responds to certain people in our communities. That's what we need to do. See, this is why I always say we need to throw out this race thing all the time. We need to stop thinking and looking through the world through a lens of race. Because I can tell you, those five officers, they're not members of the Aryan Nation. They're not members of the Ku Klux Klan. They're not members of white supremacy. They were a bunch of people who overstepped the bounds of their authority to execute judgment on a person who did not deserve it. He did not deserve that. I was watching a video on YouTube earlier today. It's a show that comes on Video One called Fatal Attractions. And it was this young man in Los Angeles. He was a gangbanger, but he was real smart. He was real smart, very smart. And all his friends, they went off to college, and, you know, he had this friend that was a female. She was talking about she was going to college. He was like, yeah, one of these days I'm going to join up with the rest of you all. And so he left the Los Angeles area to go to this place called 29 Palms, which is about, I think it's an hour east of Los Angeles. And he wanted to, you know, start his life over. So he tried, you know, to start relationships with these different girls till he found this one. And they were getting kind of close. And one day this girl is calling him and he's not answering his phone. She comes to the house, she comes to his apartment, unlocks the door, looks in, and he's laid out in the hallway in a pool of blood. He was killed. He was murdered. And they said whoever murdered him from outside the apartment. And they found, you know, shell casings from two different caliber pistols, 40s and 38s. So they figured it was two people at least that killed him. Well, it turns out his former girlfriend, she got mad because he's with this new girl. And her and this new girl, they got into a little tussle and everything, and he got between them, and she pushed him, and he pushed her back down on the ground. She got a little cut, and she was like, okay, I got something for you. I got something for you. So later on that night, you know, she and these two gentlemen come to his apartment, and they didn't even knock on the door. They saw his shadow come across the blinds, and they just started shooting, and one of the bullets hit him in the neck, and he probably bled out within 3 minutes. He was already dead when they found him. So they took these people to court. You know, they were convicted of murder. And one of the shooters, his girlfriend and his aunt even testified, said he, you know, he was bragging about shooting this guy. And so, you know, all three of them, the ex-girlfriend and the two shooters, they were two young men, they were being tried together. And if they were convicted, all three of them could go to jail. So this girl was like, you know what, I don't want to go to jail. So she took a plea deal and said that she would testify against these young men. She would just get, you know, 3 years probation. She didn't want to go to jail. But surprise, surprise, she got on the stand and she said that these young men did not shoot this guy. She took back her story, and the two men were acquitted. But because she testified with them, you know, she vouched for them, it destroyed the plea deal. So she ended up going to prison for less than 2 years. And I said, you mean to tell me these guys killed this dude in cold blood? She was part of it. They get acquitted. She gets less than 2 years in prison. I said, that's not justice. And all the players in this situation, they were all black. No white people involved. They were all black. I said, that's not justice. That's why I don't believe in plea deals. You know, you can say whatever you want. And if you vouch for a plea deal, that's fine. I don't believe in plea deals. Because things like this will happen. But anyway, I'm coming at the top of the hour. Time to do the advertisements and everything. And when I'm done, I'll see you on the other side. You are listening to Black by Color only on CNM Radio.
Conservatives are always fighting to find a place they can call home. And every time we find one, the leftists in this nation take that away. Well, we have a new home now, and all you have to do is go in and join. Bite Me in the Basement is that site where we can join in to get our voices heard by others who feel the same way as we do. Just join BiteMeInTheBasement.com and join us for a rousing discussion of American patriotism and become a member. Learn things that you can do to help America become great again, to stop the lawless things that are going on so we never have to see another fraudulent election like the one that put America-hating Joe Biden into the White House, and now he shouldn't even be there. That's BiteMeInTheBasement.com, and join patriotic Americans for a vision for a future America.
Conservative Nation Media is the one network where America always wins because we agree with Trump. Fake news is not where it's at.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Welcome back to the show. We are at the top of the hour, and I think it's time to release the fruit bats. Oh, no. My fruit bat alert. That means I'm about to go to the phones, which means if you're on the phone and you're a fruit bat, you better hang up right now. And the type of people I deem are fruit bats are those who like to indulge in excessive profanity. I let a few of them come through. I let a few cuss words come through, but I don't like excessive profanity. I don't allow ad hominem attacks, gaslighting, character assassinations, trolling, things of that sort. If you like to involve yourselves in those type of activities, I would advise you right now to hang up, or I will be happy, more than happy, to oblige you. But having said all that, let me go to the phones. Hello, welcome to the show. As if I don't know who this is.
Hello, Vincent, how you doing?
What's cracking, my buddy?
Only the bacon in the skillet.
I know this.
You know, elaborate on some very good issues. And these people in Memphis is shutting down highways and things. It's totally, totally crazy. You know,
yeah,
in Missouri,
yeah,
they passed a law where you get out on the highway. That's a felony. And Tennessee needs to do the same thing. Why in the hell are you trying to disrupt other people's travels who don't have any concern about your issue whatsoever and don't want to? Why are you forcing them to be involved?
Yeah.
And that's seemingly how it goes, especially when people use these terminologies and descriptions as we and us. No, that's your problem.
Yeah, exactly. Pronoun trouble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as these cops is concerned, you're absolutely right. They're not a narrative on white police brutality is gone. Now what you gonna do?
Yeah.
And you know,
exactly,
something was going on there. When this kid's See, when the police stop you and they turn their lights on and they pull up behind you and, you know, they put you on the computer and run you and then they get out and come to the driver's side of the door and ask you for your driver's license and registration. Now, apparently that didn't happen here. Now, if they chasing you in hot pursuit, when they stop you, they're going to come up to you and they're going to open the door and pull you out and immediately handcuff you. You know why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when you run up to the police, you are already a felon.
Mm-hmm.
You are a felon when you run from the police. And if this gentleman, and something was going on there. Now, some people say that he was messing with one of those cops' girlfriend. I don't know. I mean, that's what I heard.
I don't know, but yeah. Oh, I ain't heard that one.
But that surely would make the son of a gun pissed off when he catch you, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, what he should have done, I think, I don't care if they are beating me, I would have took a butt beating there and let them handcuff me. Because then, after I got out, I could have went on with my paperwork pursuing civil action. And probably would have got a settlement of some money that I can enjoy. Right?
That's true.
But unfortunately, he chose to run again. Or run the first time. I don't know which one was the first time. Was they chasing him? Or when he broke and ran, was that the first time he ran? But then he was a felon at that point. Now, you're right. Yeah. Maybe some overzealousness in the captivating of this person went astray. But I don't know. I don't think they was intentional because, you know, when they had to set up a perimeter to corral this man, and if they really had some intentions on getting him, they could have dropped a pistol. And say, well, he dropped the pistol, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, think about these things.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, and I agree with that. I think they overstepped their bounds. You know, I don't think they intended to really, you know, cause him any hurt or anything. But I think they got caught up in the heat of the moment and just said, hey, let's go, you know. But it doesn't condone what they did, though. That, you know, and I want my listeners to understand that I am not condoning what they did.
You know, no, so. They shouldn't have beat him when they caught him. But if he had just went on and allowed himself to be handcuffed, and you know who else takes some responsibility in this? It's the NAACP. You know why?
Yeah, exactly.
Why? Why would they take some responsibility in this?
The reason why. That push that narrative.
Go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were asking me the question.
Yeah, I am. I am asking you the question.
I think the reason why is because they have painted the police force as some type of white supremacist type of thing, you know.
Let me tell you the reason why. Because in Missouri, for one, probably elsewhere too, they put out a national warning that if you drive through Missouri, you stand a chance of being killed by white police. They put out that ban, travel ban. Yeah. Now, they put out a travel ban saying if you drive through Missouri, you stand a chance of being killed by white police. Well, what do you think people going to have in their mind if they ever involved in a traffic stop? Oh, my God, I'm getting ready to die.
Yeah.
Well, should they not take some responsibility for putting out such a reckless comment? It's about like worse than hollering, what, fire in a theater?
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, people around the nation, they hear this and they think the same thing is going to happen in their state. That, you know, if they can do it in Missouri, they can do it in North Carolina, they can do it in Virginia, they can do it in Vermont, they can do it in California, you know.
So everybody that's stopped by the police or been about ready to stop by, you better think you might want to get the hell out of there. Run. Run.
Yeah.
They're going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
It was totally irresponsible for them. Then you had one associated there in Memphis said, now we become relevant, or something of that fact.
Yeah.
Maybe that was before he even seen that the police officers was black.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, hey, we hate to see, but you know, that Scorpion unit, you know what their responsibility were? To target violent offenders in high crime area. I think it was 3 units like that. Why the hell you need so many units like that? Because they running into people that's carjacking and doing other things like captivating the intersection in some streets and idiots driving around in circles, squealing their tires, burning rubber. Why in the world would people always want to hold up everybody else whereas they can witness you acting a damn fool?
Yeah.
Have you ever been caught up in something like that? Trying to get someplace?
I've never been caught up in anything like that. And to be honest with you, some of this stuff that I see on the news, that's basically where I see it, or on a TV show or something like that. Because I'm the type of person, I don't get out a lot. I'm one of them introverted.
Well,
type
yeah.
People.
Most of the time, it's in these black Democrat black areas that happens to be Democrat, but which ain't. Which one's not?
Yeah.
So if this unit, members of this unit pull a car over and they walk up to the driver to ask for their license and registration, what do you think the first thing going to come out of the driver's mouth in these particular areas? I mean, it ain't just that area in Memphis. You got the same thing in St. Louis with Ferguson's and other. What do you think the first thing will come out their mouth as we have witnessed on video?
Why are you pulling me over? I didn't do nothing. What did I do? I didn't do nothing wrong.
There you go.
You know? And that's what this young man said. I didn't do nothing wrong. I didn't do anything
that's
wrong.
Right.
I didn't do anything wrong.
And when they come back with the ticket and ask them, is you going to sign it? Here, you need to sign this. And they're going to go through that again. And they say, I ain't signing nothing. Yeah. Then he asks them, will you sign the ticket? He'll say that about 2 or 3 times. Then at that point, what do you think happens?
I ain't signing no ticket. And then they start going off at the cop. Oh, you're just doing this because I'm black. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, yada, 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 yada.
Then what
yada.
Happens? If you don't sign the ticket, you got to be
arrested.
You're
going to go to jail.
Right,
yep.
Because the ticket is in – the citation and you signing that ticket is in lieu of bond.
Yep.
And if you don't want to exercise that privilege right there on the spot, then you're going to jail – whereas you can participate in a bond arrangement. Well, they ain't going to let you go.
Mm-mm.
Your driver's license is bond.
And see, that's the thing, too. You know, they think if they're signing the ticket that they're admitting to guilt. But, most of the time you are guilty anyway, but they think it's an admission of guilt and that, oh, I ain't going to sign it because you all can say that I'm guilty because I signed. Cause, no, that's not what it is. And it's just like you said, it's in lieu of bond. And if you don't sign that ticket, they can send you to jail, you know.
Well, they have to. You don't want to pay your bond. You just want to be conveniently let go, exercising some superficial privileges. That's what it's all about.
Really. Exactly.
So you like this grinder thing. You do the crime, do the time.
Exactly. You know. And
she should be finishing her time in the United States jail.
Yeah. And I'm reminded of a lady who came through here. I forgot her name, Dottie something, came through Virginia. She was around Emporia, Virginia, and she got pulled over for speeding. And police officer pulled her over. And said, "Well, she's like, well, what'd you pull me over for? Don't give them any questions. You know why he pulled you over. You're doing 55 and a 35 mile an hour. You know why they pulled you over, you know. But she's like, what'd you pull me over? I wasn't doing anything. We caught you doing 55 and a 35 mile an hour zone. And she was like, well, I didn't see any speed limit. Now that's when they start playing they start playing ignorant, you know, because you're not going to tell me you drove down the road about 5 miles and you didn't see one speed limit sign, you know.
Yeah, they had a case down there in Louisiana where this guy had been listening to what they say in the barbershop, that the white police going to kill you. So he makes a traffic infraction, and the police get behind him, highway patrol. And he pulls over, from what I understand. Then, for some reason or another, along the way, he takes off. Sort of like that Wright in Minnesota.
Yeah.
He takes off, and he's leading a chase through residential neighborhoods, driving upwards of over 100 miles an hour. And then at some point in time later, he misjudged this, that, lost control of the car, crashed, and he's unconscious practically. So the police runs up, and they snatch him out the car. Well, if they had left him in the car after they had this wreck, well, maybe it could have caught on fire and he would have burned to death.
Yeah.
But in the long run, he did end up dying. Maybe it was from his injury, but No. The police beat him and all this stuff. Damn governor, which is a Democratic governor in a red state, saying, well, if he had been white, he wouldn't have died. And some dumb shit like crap like that.
No.
But that's the things you face with. So we're going to see how this, what goes on from here on.
Yeah.
And Tennessee need to pass a law that people get out on interstate highways and block that they need to face felony charges and go to jail.
Exactly.
Because other people got time getting involved in your issues.
That's right.
Where's Sawyer?
He's not around. My sister's here. Retta, she's here. You know.
Tell her to get on the phone and talk. Express herself.
Retta likes to. I think she's more introverted than I am. No, Retta, I'm not trying to draw you out, okay?
Well, see, all these things have to be taken into consideration. Then you got a police chief who's in Elk, where she came from, and I just put that story in your message because Facebook don't like what I say and want to punish me. I had a friend who posted her wedding picture. The wedding was 40 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So I jokingly said, you know, I'm going to get in my time machine and go back and kidnap you the day before so you can't attend the wedding. The people are saying, where is, you know, such and such? Where is such and such? The same thing they do when the groom don't show up and people make comments and say, well, he probably got kidnapped. So these idiots that work for Facebook not knowing what the hell the standards, traditions is around people, they're going to say that what I said was hateful. Well, how the hell am I going to get in a time machine and go back 40 damn years to accomplish it?
I mean, really.
You see how dumb these people are,
funny.
Man?
Facebook is working funny. I don't understand that. Yeah.
That's what you're working with nowadays. A bunch of dumbasses. That's what they are.
I mean, it's crazy, you know, and you know it comes from, you know, this wokeness that has infected this country within the last several years. You know, that's where that comes from. You know, we want to guard what you say. We want to control what you say, and you know, we want to get it to the point where you're afraid to say certain things, and you'll only understand that you can say this and not meet the repercussions of it. But other things, you know, they want to control the speech. That's basically what they want to do, control the narrative. Oh, yeah, and Retta knows about that because Retta is jailbait. You know, she says, I'm the queen of being banned. And it seems like every time I look up, Retta's being banned for something that she may have said about 10 years ago on Facebook. And they go back 10 years and they say, oh, you said this, so we're going to give you a 30-day ban. I mean, every time I look up, Retta's like, you know, I'm like, where's Retta? I ain't seen Retta. You know, I mean, you miss your sister sometimes. And she's like, I'm in Facebook jail again. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, and then another thing is going on in Florida with Governor DeSantis. Everybody's on him because he removed Now get this. Black studies. Black studies and black history is two different things.
Yep.
Because in this black study, from what I heard, someone reading what was within the context of some of the material, it was really out there. I wouldn't want my kids to be exposed to that, talking about queer.
Yeah.
And gender assignments and all. Who in the hell want their kid? I mean, who in the heck normally, with normal intelligence, want their kid to be exposed to something like that? Ain't nothing about no black history. And, you know, here's another thing. This whole thing about being able to teach black history is just about absolute abuse anyway, because classrooms are so divisive. They have so much. You have kids from every place in the world in some of these classrooms.
Yeah.
So what you going to do?
Yeah.
If you do for one, you got to do for all. And you can't have some material that's disparaging another ethnic group, like a lot of this material is. And what's keeping you from doing it in your churches and in your community centers and even in your home?
Yeah. A point exactly. My point exactly. You know, and they talk about, and see me, you know, when I make a statement like, I don't care about Black History Month. Oh, you're just a coon. You're a coon, you know. And I'm like, Black history is part of all history. Why do we have to separate the Black history from all history? You know, I mean, it's part of history. I can learn Black history all through the year. I don't need a month to learn about Black history. I learn about Black history every month. You know, I mean, it makes no sense. It really doesn't.
You know why that is, don't you? Because you got some individuals that want to be able to teach it. They got a degree Black history, African American history, and can't find no place to teach it. So they've got to create a place to teach it.
Exactly. Oh my goodness, that's one of the best answers I think I ever heard in my life. Exactly. They want to be the ones to be like, yes, I'm teaching Black history. Yes, I am impressing on young minds, and I'm the one doing this and whatever. You know, I mean, it's all a bunch of, you know, for lack of a better word, hogwash. That's all it is. You know. So hold on right there, Pianchi. I got someone got a call coming in.
Oh, I'm scared.
Hello, welcome to the show. Hello, welcome to the show. You got your hand raised.
By the way, where is Irondale?
I don't know where I ain't talked to Irondale in about, with the exception of last week, I ain't talked to him in about 2 weeks. I need to give him a call. But I got someone in the queue that got their hand raised. I don't know who it is, but.
You think Irondale done went stealth on us? He's there, but you can't see him?
I don't know. Maybe he has. You know, we need to check. Oh, okay. Caller, the caller just dropped. Oh, wait a minute. I got another call here. Let me get this one. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Man, only a fruit bat would call you a coon for not waxing orgasmic over Black History Month.
Oh, my
God. What's
goodness.
Up, man? Hey, Pianchi, how you doing, Brother P? And Brother Vince, I'm sorry I'm coming in so late to the show, but man, I had to do some constructive engagement with folks who are trying to roll back this roll tide of Marxism and progressivism, man. I had to do what I could to help them out, but I did get here as soon as I could.
Well, we always welcome to see you, Sarge.
Oh, yeah.
And same here.
Yeah, always a good time having you here. I was discussing these. You could probably guess about what I was talking about today. These five officers who were convicted of killing this motorist, you know, who was a black guy, and you know,
well, they haven't been convicted yet, but it's almost a certainty that they will be.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Have you seen the video?
Yeah, I've seen all four of them that the Memphis Police Department
posted. Yeah, I heard the dialogue. What's particularly, I think, enlightening is you got to stay on video number 4 for the entire after-incident dialogue. Now, look, I've been in a lot of these kind of situations before. I mean, many. And, yes, there's a certain amount of end-zone dancing when you've done a good job under arduous circumstances and you put yourself at risk. And, yeah, we do that end-zone thing and all that stuff. But what I saw with this was a little bit different. It was, I mean, it was not like the kind of thing, good job, congratulations, hey, thanks for the teamwork kind of thing. No, this was something entirely different. It was really dark and heedless of professional responsibilities and the preparations to report and catalog something that's going to go up for adjudication, assuming you think you did the right thing. You know what I mean? I didn't see a hint of professionals involved, nor any care for the person they had in custody. Because remember, the courts have said the only time you're obligated to ensure the safety and welfare of an individual is when you've taken them into custody. You have an obligation to do that. Now, you know, look, I can criticize these guys on any number of tactical levels. Their performance was just abysmal. I've never seen four big, beefy, apparently strong guys who got a suspect surrounded and he gets away. That's one thing I've never seen. Not seeing suspects escape because you don't get them. I've never seen anything like that. But look, we can Monday morning quarterback their performance, and we should, because it was god-awful horrid. It violated every protocol and tactical principle I know of watching it. But I think the real problem is what I see is the administrators in Memphis who did not apparently, and this police chief, man, look, I hear is all this praise for her. Well, number one, I think she's trying to evade her responsibility. She's pandering like 90 going north. She is responsible for the performance of her officers. It is obvious they were abysmally trained. And, Bianchi, you and I know we've been in touch with an individual who says, who asserts, and I can take what he says with reasonable confidence, that they don't have a formalized program of training for this supposedly elite team of officers. Not even in the basic use of force. I'm talking about the basic use of force is established by the National Institute of Justice with the use of force continuum and Supreme Court decisions like Graham versus Connor and Tennessee versus Garner. I'm talking about that kind of thing. And, man, if that is true, then both the city of Memphis and that police chief bear a great deal of responsibility for what we see happening. And they're trying to get, I think right now they're trying to get out in front of it with the pandering. Oh, it's the most inhumane, horrible thing you've ever seen. Instead of saying, well, we're going to do our job and pursue this diligently and ensure that justice is done both for these officers and for this family. No, that was what I heard. I heard it sounded like Benjamin Crump. It was a disgrace.
Hey, Sarge.
It is a disgrace.
You know, the police chief, Sherilyn Davis, was fired from a previous job in
Atlanta. Believe me, I know. She from Atlanta, the Atlanta PD.
At the botched sex crimes investigation. Now, wait a minute. Sex crimes, well, I guess you're talking about something that occurred to be in Atlanta, black women, right?
That's right.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Right.
Really?
She sued. She got a job back. And when she got a job back and got reestablished her credentials, then she beat feet out of town to get hired over there in Memphis.
Oh, she
I'm
got
not
the job back.
I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed by anything
she
said.
I thought she would have got a white person would have got their job back. Sound like some privilege going on to me. And then again, another point too. A lot of this stuff is nepotism. They hire their relatives. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And their relatives ain't worth a damn for the job that they've been hired for. We have heard that story many, many, many times.
Yeah. What really disturbed me was I heard very little of her taking responsibility for her officers. That's what a leader would do. And a leader would say, if there are any deficiencies in our department that have led to this, we are going to correct them. That's what a leader would say. She's not a leader. Yeah. She's a politician, and she's a panderer, and she's trying to get out from underneath this. That's my personal belief.
Yeah. And the thing that got me was how unprofessional these men sounded when they were committing their act. I mean, it was just unprofessional. I'm like, who hired these guys? They sounded like gangbangers. Like, you know, I mean, it was like, are you kidding me? Police officers are actually talking like this? I say you got to be outside of your mind. I mean, for real.
I'm going to tell you who I think has nailed this, and this is why, and because it is so politically incorrect to say, so utterly unwoke, so anti-woke, so intersectionally incorrect. That's the word for it. When it comes to intersection, it violates every rule of intersection. But this man had the guts to say it. That's Brother Jason Whitlock. You want to hear what he said?
Oh, yeah.
I got the quote here. I'm looking at it right now. He said, there is a racial element. And this is a story about young black men and their inability to treat each other the humane way. Everyone involved in this on the street level was either 24 to 32 years old. Everybody. It was a group of young black men, 5-on-1. Looked like gang violence to me. It looked like what young black men do when they're supervised by a single black woman. And that's what they got going on in the Memphis Police Department. They've elected some or put some black woman in charge of the police force, and we're getting the same kind of chaos and disunity and violence that we see in a lot of these cities run by single mothers. If you want to discuss the breakdown of family that leads to disrespect for authority, that causes you to resist the police and run from the police and not comply with the police because you resist authority at all times because there was no male authority in your home, let's have that discussion. Hey,
yeah.
I know people don't want to face this, and I know every element of what he said may or may not be true, but I think the discussion needs to be had, and because there's no honesty, there's no guts, it won't be had.
Yeah. And when you say that, I think about my own city of Durham, North Carolina, where I live now. Our mayor is a black woman, and our chief of police is a black woman. Now, those of you all who are black and you're female, I am not denigrating black women. You know, I need to make sure I get that across to my sister in the chat room. I'm not at all trying to denigrate black women or anything like that. But we have that same problem somewhat here in Durham, and we had almost a record-setting year last year. We had like 44 murders in Durham last year, which in a city like Durham, that's huge. But what I'm seeing with a lot of these black Democratic women is that they care more about the wokeness than they do about overall, you know, doing what's overall beneficial to everyone. They always want to look for, okay, well, you know, we want to cut down on white cops, you know, killing black people and everything, instead of saying, you know, well, police brutality is a problem that is general to the entire population. It's not just occurring among black folks, but white folks are going through it, Hispanic folks are going through it, Asian folks are going through it. It's something that we need to address across the board, not because of a certain type of race of people, you know, black people, you know, to be specific.
Well, who's committing the killings in Durham?
Black folks.
Yeah, no community has been afflicted by the lack of fathers more than the black community. None. It is endemic with the black community like no other.
Well,
most black children grow up without their fathers.
Black fathers, I mean, in prison. Sorry.
The only way you can think that wouldn't have an effect on a culture if you think black fathers are not important. If you think that, then I suppose you could say that black fathers don't mean anything.
Well, apparently they don't, because they've got you got this childhood tax credits that pay these mamas up to $6,000 a year for the child, even if they ain't working. So that takes the place of the $50 a month that the father would have done if he was there. That needs to be an outstanding bill, a debt too. Well, got to take care of your kids. Oh no, they don't want that. Who's doing all the killings in Durham?
Black folks. Vincent? It's black folks. As a matter of fact, like I said a few shows back, it was a young man that I used to teach in Sunday school. He was 25 years old. He got murdered by another black person. You know,
well, you know,
it's the black people.
I don't think you're stretching it too far when you speak on black women that's behind a lot of this stuff, because when you lay it out on the table and you write in names, your name is usually all what? Black women. What are they, prosecutors? What are they, mayors? Especially prosecutors. How they let criminals back out on the streets. I can name some. Kim Fox. You got Mosley. Yeah. You got the one
Bush,
Ken Gardner in St. Louis,
Stephanie Rawlings Blake, what's the name, and Muriel Bowser in Washington D.C., Lori Lightfoot, for God's sake, in Chicago,
Lori Lightfoot, and I said, wait a minute, Lori Lightfoot, not too bad, and like I say, I'm sad for Mr. Nichols losing his life, but if he was in Chicago, and he got away and ran. The police got orders that you don't chase nobody, not only to the police, but not only the human police, but the police dogs. They can't chase them neither.
Oh, man.
Yeah, try to make sense of that to a dog with a prey instinct. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right? I mean, really. And folks, when we talk about black women, we're talking about basically black Democratic women. We're not talking about black women across the board. It's the black Democratic women. So, you know, we're like I said before, we're not trying to rain on the black women's parade here, you know, but it's mostly these black Democratic women, you know, people like the Sheila Jackson Lees and the Maxine Waters and people like that, you know.
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth, though, I hold the men who have enabled these state of affairs more responsible for it than the women. You got to remember, this has been largely enabled by progressive men and male feminists in coordination with female feminists who've caused this state of affairs to be what it is. To say nothing of the social engineers of the Great Society back during LBJ's days.
Yeah.
So I think if you ask me where the onus of the blame goes, it goes with men who allowed and enabled this and didn't speak about it as it was happening, who refused to acknowledge the baleful effects it was having on young black men.
Mhm. And they like to turn their head and pay attention to something else. You know, they like to divert and say, well, what about this? What about this? No, the obvious one is the one we're going to focus on. But they don't want to focus on the obvious. They want to focus on some phantom somewhere else, you know. And that's why a lot of these problems are not being solved, you know. And this is what I tell, this is why I talk the way I do about the black community. We always, you know, we talk about why so many black people living in the projects. Oh, it's the white man. How come we don't have a lot of black NFL coaches? It's the white man. You know, they always fall back on that little situation. It's the white man. He's keeping us from doing all this without realizing that, first of all, black people are only 13% of the population in this country. So you're not going to fill in all these positions with black people, okay? You know, and second of all, you need to have people who are qualified. You can't just fill this position because you don't have enough black people in this position. You know, you can't just say, oh, well, we don't have enough black people, so we got to find some black people to put in this position. See, that's why things go down in quality, because you're putting people in positions and they're not helping. All you're doing is putting them in that position, but they're not helping the overall quality of your product or your company or whatever it is. We got more diversity. You know, and by the way, diversity is just a code word for less white people. That's all that means.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you, when I was growing up, most of my male role models were men. And I remember that most of the things they projected on me were positive. And I know how important they were to my upbringing, especially my own father, say nothing of my friend's fathers cumulatively. So I know how important men are. Everyone should. We all instinctively know it. There really is no substitute for a male authority figure in the home, just like the female authority figure in the home. The two, since men and women are different in their nature, whether we want to admit it or not, you get a complete picture of what it is to be a human being, generally speaking, when you have a good male and female parent relationship. I said, I'm not talking about a dysfunctional one. I'm talking one that is at least normal. Normal parental relationship with a man and a woman, that is what is best for the upbringing in almost all instances of any child.
Let me ask you guys a question. And even in Irondale, he can get in this. When you hear some of these blacks talking, especially these ones that's running the shows or here in some organization, why do they always use the word we and us? We under attack.
Yeah.
Why is that? I don't know these people.
Yeah. Because
we
blacks. They think that if you're black, you're supposed to think like all the other blacks, that we live in a monolith. And they think we're all supposed to think this way. See, that's why they'll say people like myself and you and Sarge and Retta and whoever are not really black. You know, you might be black, but, you know, skin, you know, kinfolk ain't kinfolk. Yeah, and that's why they talk we. And I tell them, I say, what do you mean we, Kemosabe? Because you can talk about your experience, but, you know, your experience is not mine. And that's why I try to tell them one black person's experience is not all black people's experience. You can get a whole bunch of black people in a room and everything. You say, oh, okay, these people are black. But when you talk to each and every last one of them, each one of them has a different set of dreams, aspirations, things they want to do, how they think about the world, point of view and everything, but they don't want to see it like that. They think because you're black and, you know, I'm a member of the Apostles of Blackness, that you got to think like all black people do. And that's where we get into trouble, is because we don't think – we want to be individuals. We want to think for ourselves. We don't want to let people do our thinking for us. We want to come to our own conclusions, but they don't want that. They want you to come to what they have concluded, not your own conclusion, because you can't think for yourself, you know.
Vince, one thing you got to realize about progressives and leftists is they are just stuck in the collective hive mentality. Yeah, I mean, we're all cookie-cutter ants, except, of course, the leaders who are elites, and they're individuals as leaders and elites. And they're going to lead us out like Moses leading us out of the darkness and all, you know, but when it comes to thinking, they just will not give agency to individual black people. We're a collective this and a collective that. I mean, it's Marxism at its writ large in everything they do. Everything is a collective enterprise. And that's why they're missing the boat, because people are individuals. They react differently to different environmental stimuli. They have different talents. They have different aptitudes. They have different levels of intelligence. They have different levels of character. It's just, we're just not the same. And it's trying to impose this one-size-fits-all thinking and solutions on everything is inevitably always going to lead to character. You have to set out objectives and principles, and you try to conform policies to that. And you tell people they have an obligation to meet those expectations. And that's how you get things to work.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the latest disgrace is with this Treasury Secretary refusing to turn over information. You read about that, Sarge?
Yeah, I have. The suspicious activity reports that were made by financial institutions to the Treasury.
Oh, my goodness. If that was Donald Trump, oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
We never would hear the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
A radio that's on, whose switch is on off, would come on mysteriously. That's it.
That's for sure.
I like that analogy.
That's for sure, man. I mean. And that's what's so sad about this thing about Memphis right now. Look, this thing with Memphis is pretty much an open and shut case based on all the evidence I've seen so far. I mean, I know I haven't seen everything, but based on what I've seen, it's pretty much open and shut case. These guys are bound for some sort of conviction, unless, of course, it's some sort of egregious misconduct.
Well, they're going to get a different venue.
But here's the problem with this open and shut case. It's going to be pretty much resolved like this. But here's what's going to happen. This is what's going to – the aftermath is what's going to be so bad. Because even though this is like a unicorn incident, it happens every once in a blue moon. These kind of things don't happen every day. No matter what they say, they don't. But what's going to happen in the aftermath of this is the police across the country are going to retreat from policing, and the result is going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of more dead black people. That's what's going to be the result of this. Now, whether they want to admit it or not, and damn them to hell, they won't admit it because it runs against their agenda. The end result of this, if this is handled the way I suspect it's going to be, with demagoguery and bullying and intimidation and threats of riots, the end result will be hundreds, if not thousands, more dead people. That's black people particularly. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah, that's a scary thought, too. It's a true one, but it's a scary thought. You know, it's just going to cause the police
to have
that much more.
It happened with George Floyd. I mean, it led to the death of more
exactly.
black people.
Yes, it did.
Sound like it's me. It's ethnic cleansing. I don't know what all
evidence
leads to.
You got a point there. You got a point there.
Well, see, in Irondale, you can help correct this if I'm wrong, because I know you know it. If you abort over 20 million in 30 years, in 35 years, you have 324,000 black males killed by other black males. Then you look at these killings and shootings that's going on in places like St. Louis and Chicago. You know, it done got so in Chicago that in order to get into some places, probably, I ain't saying it's like that now, you got to raise your shirt and show your wound, your scars. because the numbers, just about every male in Chicago don't been shot.
I forget what the number ultimately was estimated to be, but I believe that the reign of Giuliani and the policing methods he introduced during his term as mayor of New York saved thousands of black lives, literally thousands.
Come on, Sarge. Come on, man. You know that stop and frisk was racist. Come on now. Get off of it, man.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, they have yet to explain to me how it is that a city that was averaging between 1,500 and 1,700 homicides a year with David Dinkins as mayor plummeted to under 400 on average for most of the years of his reign as mayor. I'd like you to tell me, if you can do mathematics, what do you think? How many lives do you think he's raised? Despite whatever stock and first abuses they allege, which most of them, which actually didn't occur. There were some, but it certainly wasn't to the extent they tried to claim they were. And there's nothing inherently unconstitutional about stop and frisk. Courts have said so. You know, I'd like to know how you're going to balance that out against the thousands of lives saved as a result of the particular type of policing that was in place when Giuliani was the mayor. And that's what needs to happen across the United States. Something like it. It's not the same thing.
Well, Giuliani was just benefiting from what David Dinkins had done before. I mean, you know, that's why the crime went down, because it was what David Dinkins had done before. You know, you know that's how it is
It was trying to turn the Titanic. You know, when you put the rudder over, it takes a long time for it to finally start swinging. And then it started swinging just when Giuliani came in, and only for the years that he was the mayor. I get it. Right.
Exactly.
Of course.
It's the same thing they say, you know, when we change presidents, like when Donald Trump came into office and the employee numbers for black people went up, they were saying, oh, that was because of Obama. But they can't explain to you what Obama did to be responsible for those numbers. And why did they just happen when Trump got into office?
Now, Vince, it's a lagging indicator, Vince. I mean, don't you know that? You know what a lagging indicator is?
I mean, I need to go on Google and look that up, you know, because
it was like latency, you know. You know, it's like latency. You know,
when
internet is overcrowded and, you know, you click your mouse and it takes a little while for it to, you know, click
in.
That's what it is.
When you stump your toe, it take a little bit before you feel it.
There you go.
Yeah.
The signal go all the way up to your brain.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, Julio, there's never anything conservative ever does right. The credit always goes to the progressive who was in the job before, and all the bad things that were there were simply a result of the fact you didn't wait long enough for it to come to fruition. And only getting voice, the conservatives got in office.
I tell you.
But, you know, I mean, it's just terrible, man. Everything you look now is all screwed up. I don't know what to say.
Well, you know what to say.
Yeah.
The thing about it seems like it's overwhelming. But here's the thing about it. It's like everything else we know we got to do. We got to confront it every time we see it. It's like with this poisonous critical race theory that's starting to get a hold in all the educational establishment. Thank God for politicians like Ron DeSantis and others who recognize it and are going to kill it in the cradle as it starts to come out the crib with the horns and the claws. Kill it.
Yeah.
And why would they want up? Why would they want to introduce that to classrooms with a lot of white kids in it to try to smear and try to upset these white kids with one-sidedness and, in many cases of time, just plain old untruths?
Power and manipulation, that's why.
Why do they want to do that to these poor kids?
Power and manipulation. If you can manipulate them into guilt-tripping, you can get them to do anything. You can get them to wealth redistribute. You can get them to yield positions that rightfully belong to people who are either more competent, more qualified, or have a better aptitude. You can do anything. You can have more power and more control than you can probably even imagine. That's why they do it.
It's the old divided, united we stand, divided we fall type of tactic. It seeks to separate us so we can be more easily controlled. And, you know, the very people who stand against segregation and whatever, they're all for it when it comes to them gaining power over, you know, a certain part of the population. That they can easily control you that way, you know.
And
so
when you got
that,
to one of the best high schools in the nation, like Thomas E. Jefferson High School, actually not notifying students of their inclusion on the merit scholar listings, so they can include it on their resumes because they don't want other students to feel bad, you know it's working with a certain segment of the establishment.
Yeah. So that's all it is about is control.
If it wasn't
Go
for
ahead,
your y'all. Show, we wouldn't be able to find out about this stuff, man.
Well, I tell you, without this show, I probably wouldn't learn anything because I get people like you and Sarge on here, you know. And someone complained that when you all get on the show, I lose control of the show, which I don't know what they mean by that because I just let you all have your way because I'm learning just as well as my audience is. So, you know, they say, well, Sarge,
only Democrats don't want you to be able to talk freely. They even have a
prescription. Don't want this sort of thing to be heard.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
troubled by it because it either upsets their particular ideological bent or they don't want people to know about these things. They'd rather they didn't.
Yeah.
They don't
exactly.
like it. I mean, it's amazing to me to which our opposition wants to censor and shut down voices. We see it in these high-tech platforms. They're doing it at the highest levels, and they're doing it at the behest of frequently governmental agencies, the FBI, the CDC, the CIA, the White House.
Exactly. So, you know, whenever, and see, like I said, I know what I'm doing when I'm on this program, and I've always admired folk like you, Pianchi and Sarge, but I like to let people know that long before you all even came on my show, I was doing this show. I started this show in 2009, you know, and, you know, I've been doing this show ever since.
I just listened. I didn't call in.
I used to listen to
What's that again?
Every now
and then. I used to just listen, man. I didn't call in back then.
Oh, yeah.
I used to listen and giggle.
Why is that? Because of my rhetoric?
Because you were saying everything I thought needed to be said. I haven't been seeing any need to insert myself into it. But I'm just saying, so much is going on now with regards to the stuff that's going on now, everybody needs a little help. This is just too much. I can't cover it all.
Exactly.
The RK can't cover it all. The more the merrier. The more information gets out there, the better.
And that's just how I see it, you know. And I try to let people know that I don't know everything. I told people that I'm not a history buff, but they said, oh, Vincent says he doesn't know history. All I said was I'm not a history buff, but I know enough about history to be able to put two and two together, you know. But, you know, they take things that you say and then they, you know, put their own spin on it and they say, well, you said this. And I'm like, no, I did not say that, you know. Like, you know, we got some people saying that I said that I'm not a conservative, but I tell people that I don't like to identify as one. I like to identify as a Christian because I really don't have a political axe to grind, but we live in the United States of America, so politics is going to be the norm. So you got to speak out on it. And I tell people, politically, I'm a conservative. So, you know, but I like to address myself as a Christian first and foremost, but that's not me saying that I'm not a conservative, you know, and people, you know, like I said, they take your words, they twist them out of proportion, and they think they got one up on you and everything, and they really don't know what they're talking about, you know. And,
yeah,
you know,
you're right about that, Vincent.
Say that again.
You're right about that.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, Vince. You're a Christian, Vince, and it's obvious you understand what transcendent objective truth is. Because most Christians, Christians anyway, believe that they understand that. And if you do that, you're going to be conservative because time-tested principles, for the most part, with some exceptions, are
there
in fact based on transcendent objective truth.
There you go. I mean, and as a Christian, I can't be a Democrat. I just, you know, I know some people say, well, there's some Christians in the Democrats, and I don't see it. I just can't see how I can be a Christian and a Democrat at the same time because it's two opposing forces, basically, and you can't be one and be the other at the same time. You know, I know some people, they think they can be a Christian and be a Democrat, but I think the people who call themselves Christians and Democrat are those who, you know, once again, like I said earlier in the show, they like to give a lot of lip service, but by their actions, they show that they're not what their lips are bouncing them to be, you know, so, but that's just how I see it, you know, that's just how I see it, but,
Well, you're a strong
man,
Vincent. But next week, let's talk about these magnetic gloves that these wide receivers in the NFL is wearing, which has to mean that the balls has got some metal in them.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, man.
So work on that. Anyway, I'll talk to you guys.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind. We'll watch the game closely for evidence of it.
Yeah, but anyway, I got about 30 seconds left in the show. Want to, you know, give a shout out to Pianchi, my sister Retta, and Sarge. Thank you all for coming on the show and, you know, adding your rhetoric to the program. I really appreciate it. Next week, God willing, I should be having another edition of Black by Color Only. So, you know, set your time clock, get ready, you know, because we're about to do this thing again, God willing. But anyway, you all take care of yourselves. Enjoy your Saturday. And until the next time, this is Vincent E. Brown signing off. I'll see you on the rebound. You all have a great week.